How Liz Kanner came to make Orgasm Incorporated her first feature-length documentary is almost as interesting as the subject itself. After she was hired by a drug company to edit erotic videos to be used in a clinical drug trial, Ms. Kanner soon came to suspect that the company was actually promoting the concept of a medical condition called female sexual dysfunction in order to produce what promised to be an extremely lucrative cure, the first FDA-approved female Viagra. Her film looks at the creation of a wide range of drugs, creams, and medical devices, all promising to bring all women to orgasm and to so-called normal sexual function. And I'm very pleased that it brings Liz Kanner to our show. Hello.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
What was the company you were working for?
It was called Vivus, and they are based in California. And they are known for developing drugs for, at that point, for male erectile dysfunction. Now they're working on obesity drugs.
Did you take the job to get material for a film?
Actually, what had happened was I had been producing documentaries for about 10 years on human rights issues, and I was starting to get really depressed about the human condition. One thing that happens when you make documentaries is you watch the footage over and over again. So I had been looking at footage at things like police brutality and genocide, and I was starting to get nightmares from this footage. And so I thought my next topic has to be something that's, well, pleasurable, because I want to have pleasurable dreams. So I started researching women and what medicine had said about conception and sexual response and pleasure. And I was in the middle of shooting this documentary when, out of the blue, I was offered a job at a pharmaceutical company that was developing an orgasm cream for women.
Well, this is actually about lack of pleasure, isn't it? The company's focus was, as you said, FSD, female sexual dysfunction. I'm assuming that's the female version of male erectile dysfunction, now called ED on every television commercial.
Correct. What had happened was in the late 90s when Viagra was such a blockbuster drug for men, Pfizer turned to women and said, there's got to be a bigger market here. And the drug company that I worked for had actually developed a drug like Viagra, but that had come out before Viagra came out. And so they were also interested in pursuing something. The assumption was that these drugs were going to work on women, that genital engorgement, which is what Viagra does, would give women fabulous orgasms. But the problem was they needed to develop a disorder in order to pursue the drugs. The FDA requires that.
Well, isn't there a debate about whether FSD is a real medical condition or a psychological disorder or whether it even exists?
There's a lot of debate about female sexual dysfunction. I think it's partly because of where it originated, which was in the late 90s. Pfizer and other drug companies like Vivus, basically they put together the meetings where the disorder was defined. 18 of the 19 doctors had ties to 22 drug companies that came up with the disorder. The 19th was an FDA official. And the definition of it is extremely broad, so that pretty much any sexual complaint falls into the category. And it's not to say that some women don't suffer from real sexual problems that are caused by medical conditions like radical hysterectomies, or if you're on antidepressants, that can affect libido, and if you have diabetes. But the majority of women are perfectly healthy, and their sexual problems stem from things like past sexual abuse, relationship issues, poor sex education, working too hard. I mean, all these sort of things can contribute to your sexual experience.
But if we can come up with a pill, then we can get past all of that. Or a cream, or in some cases, some very weird-looking devices. Scary implants.
That's true. There's even an inventor out there who's developed an orgasmatron, you know, sort of named after Woody Allen's device in Sleeper, and Barbarella also had an orgasmatron that Jane Fonda was in. That was an electrode that you put into somebody's spine and supposedly trigger an orgasm. So there's a lot of all sorts of quick fixes that the medical industry is pursuing. They're hoping they can find the sort of ultimate panacea to give women fabulous sex. I think, unfortunately, that it's been a much more difficult road than they ever imagined.
Mm-hmm. Well, because nothing seems to have worked. There have been a number of clinical trials over the years. When did this begin? Right after Viagra became such a success and a moneymaker for Pfizer?
Right, exactly. So it was like this race that started, and everyone wanted to get FDA approval, because if you get FDA approval for your product, what that means is insurance companies will cover it. And so they were trying as quickly as they could to come up with something. And every year I kept hearing, there's going to be a product now. There's going to be a product that comes out this year. But what's happened is that when these products have gone before the FDA, the actual efficacy has been extremely low. And in fact, sugar pills have worked pretty much as well. And in fact, when I filmed the hearing, one of the FDA officials said, why don't you just sell the sugar pill? There's less side effects, and it seems to work almost as well.
But isn't part of the problem, if we're going to call it a problem, the fact that the FDA even allowed for something like female sexual dysfunction to be considered a medical problem? Once you do that, then you open the door to all of these attempts to come up with some kind of cure.
I think this is a very tricky situation, partly because there are real medical conditions that women suffer from. But I think the big concern is that we have direct-to-consumer advertising in this culture. And so what happens is now, since the late 90s, this was part of deregulation, by the way. We didn't used to have direct-to-consumer advertising of pharmaceuticals. But what's happened is that—
With all those side effects. I love just listening to the side effects. You know, this thing will cure all of your problems, but it may lead you to commit suicide, to go blind.
And if you have an erection for 4 hours, see your doctor. Although I think that's part of the ad. But anyways, So I think that definitely we've become a culture that's inundated with these ads, and the side effects are quite extreme, with some of them actually more extreme than the actual thing that the drug's going to cure. And we in the United States are the only countries in the world beside New Zealand that allows direct-to-consumer advertising of pharmaceuticals. So our whole culture has changed toward or at least the medical industry has really put a lot of research and development money into developing these lifestyle drugs that are going to develop a quick fix, supposedly. But to come back to sort of your original point, I think the problem is that we don't have the protections in place to protect women from getting on drugs that they don't need that could harm them around female sexual dysfunction. You can tell from the sort of marketing budgets that were going into promoting these drugs even before they were FDA approved, things like $100 million. Now, that was not just going to be going to the small percentage of women that suffer from a radical hysterectomy or, you know, a medical condition. They were planning to market that drug to all these healthy women.
My guest is Liz Kanner, whose film Orgasm Incorporated opens today at the Quad Cinema here in New York. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Originally, wasn't it thought that Viagra would work because it would do pretty much the same thing for women that it does for men, cause blood to be accumulate in the genital area, and that's what leads to orgasm.
Right.
The Berman sisters, among others, promoted it, didn't they?
Oh, yeah, the Berman sisters. Right. So basically what happened was there was this sort of assumption that men and women were the same when it came to sexual response. And I always wondered, did they ever ask a woman? I mean, no woman ever thinks, am I engorged? I mean, it's not something we think about. So basically they started with Viagra, and the drug that I worked on was based on alprostadil, so these engorgement drugs. And then when that didn't work, they decided, okay, it's in a woman's mind. So they started developing drugs that would affect our mind. They thought testosterone was the problem. And, in fact, there's still a testosterone product that's coming down the pipeline.
Giving women testosterone?
Yes, giving women testosterone, which we know, by the way, is linked to breast cancer. So not something to be taken lightly.
And then the mice start growing mustaches.
And getting deep voices and looking like men. How attractive. Anyways, so testosterone was something that they worked on. Then there's been this—
That was Procter & Gamble did a skin patch for that, didn't they?
That's right. They did a patch called Intrinza. That was going to be sort of the great panacea, but that actually didn't get approved.
But that patch is still available online, isn't it?
Right. It's available online, and it's available in the EU. And it was only tested on women who had radical hysterectomies and were taking replacement estrogen, and the efficacy was very poor. But because they have protections in the EU, women who are healthy probably won't end up on that drug. They don't have as much off-label prescribing.
Well, if most cases of, I'm putting quotes around FSD, are not physiological, what are the most common reasons you found for women reporting sexual problems?
Oh, there's as many reasons as there are women, basically, and it depends, you know, on the day, I think. But, I mean, basically, and your partner and how well you communicate. But I think one of the things that I was most struck by was really how poorly educated we are in this culture, that on the one hand, children start looking at pornography on average at the age of 11. On the other hand, we're teaching abstinence only in the schools, and you're never really allowed to talk about pleasure. And so we don't teach full genital anatomy. We don't teach about the clitoris.
You point out that there are women who actually don't know where their clitoris is located.
That's correct. That was something that I was really surprised to find out about. But I think it's because we don't teach about it. And And I followed this woman who had the electrode put into her spine. And when I asked her, could she have orgasms through other means? It turns out she could. She just thought she was supposed to have orgasms with her husband during intercourse. And she was completely surprised when I told her that 70% of women need direct clitoral stimulation in order to have an orgasm. And she suddenly realized she was normal. So I think that this just speaks to the fact that we're not very well educated, even though we're so inundated with sexual imagery in our culture.
Well, you must have spoken to some of the scientists involved in all this research, and they're aware that the tests haven't turned out as well as everybody imagined. What are they saying to justify what they're doing?
Well, I think that they're still pursuing it. The race is still on.
Do they think they just have to find that magic bullet?
That's right. I think it's a complicated thing. Not only do they have to find the magic bullet, but they have to convince the FDA that they've found the magic bullet. And that's going to come down to what does it mean to be healthy? And this is where it's female sexual dysfunction is actually a misnomer, because there's nothing that defines what function is. There's nothing that says you should be having 10 orgasms a month to be healthy, or you should be having, 20 sexual thoughts in an hour to be healthy. So what it's come down to is satisfying sexual events a month. So the FDA is going to have to determine how many satisfying sexual events a month women need to have in order to be considered healthy.
Women as a group?
Women
as a group.
Isn't
there a wide range of desire among men and women?
That's right. That's right. And that's where this all gets so tricky. I mean, let's face it, sexuality is a little like art or dancing, or, it's not something that can be sort of made into a normal, because there is no normal when it comes to sexuality. It's so individual, and that's what's wonderful about it.
On the other hand, what happens with Viagra is a pill is taken and the body provides the male with the opportunity anyway to have an erection. What would happen here? You give the woman the opportunity to be sexually stimulated, but that in either case, does it actually guarantee anything?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, the fact is that Viagra...
I mean, beyond that, the word orgasm is here. The orgasm is something that is totally separate from all of this other sexual stuff.
Well, that's right. And Viagra actually doesn't cause orgasms. It only gives erections. So in some ways, maybe the endpoint for women... I mean, that's where they've had trouble figuring out what the endpoint is when it comes to women around this issue. I think... You're raising a very good point, and that is that maybe the drug industry would be better off just saying what they're doing, which is developing sex aids for women, and try and come up with something that's not going to harm them, but they don't need to be diagnosed with a disorder in order to have, because it's quite upsetting to think that you might have a disorder. I mean, like if you go out on a date, when are you going to tell your date? I mean, it's a very extreme-sounding situation.
It also reminds me a bit of something that happened over 100 years ago where the condition called hysteria, which could be both male or female, but is named after the womb, right? Hysteria is the womb, was created to explain certain conditions in women.
That's right. There's a long history of medicine medicalizing female sexuality and pleasure. So hysteria, there was frigidity, we've had nymphomania. There's a long sort of history of this kind of thing. And it's funny to note that the only actual thing that's been FDA approved for female sexual dysfunction is something called the Eero-CTD, which is a vibrating kind of sucky device that you put on the clitoris. And when they were treating hysteria back in Victorian times, they were also using vibrators. So we're kind of going back in a circle and coming back around to that period and how we're looking at sexuality.
Now, you do treat this subject rather lightly at times, and some people have been upset about that. Why did you include all of that laughter and all of those animated bits that kind of make the whole thing seem a little ridiculous?
Well, part of it had to do with the people that I was interviewing in the pharmaceutical industry and the experts like Leonore Tiefer, who were really going head-to-head with the pharmaceutical industry on this. And their tone was funny. They used a lot of humor in the interviews and just in their lives, I think, because this is something that's not comfortable to talk about, and it's not something we talk about frequently. And so, in a way, being able to laugh at it makes it easier for us to think about it and discuss it with each other.
And why do you think so many of those people were willing to talk to you, considering the fact that, the whole thing might fail?
Well, I think that initially I started making this documentary before Sicko came out. So luckily I had a lot of access. And actually when Michael Moore started shooting Sicko, it was a problem for me because the doors were closed on independent filmmakers.
They realized that they had been made to look like fools in Michael Moore's films.
Right, right. So, you know, this memo went out, don't talk to any independent filmmakers because Michael Moore uses stringers sometimes. So that made it harder. But you know, basically, I think because I didn't talk to the PR people and I didn't reach out to any of the PR people at the pharmaceutical industry, I talked to the founders and the CEOs of the companies and the people running the clinical trials, and I had access to them because I was working for Vivas. You know, you get a different look at what is happening. And in fact, in some cases, you've seen their own discomfort and inner conflict about what they're doing.
Well, I'm curious about what Vivas was hoping to achieve by creating these erotic films. There is a debate over whether women are turned on by pornography or not, but these would be female-oriented erotic films that would supposedly stimulate them to the point where they would want to have sex?
Well, so in the clinical trials, the women weren't allowed to touch themselves initially in the first phase, in the phase that we were working
on. Is that typical of clinical trials?
Yeah, they sort of step up. In this case, when they're testing these drugs. So they start out where you can't touch
yourself. No touching.
Right. So the question was, how are we going to stimulate them with an orgasm cream? So the videos were meant to stimulate the women. But then the big question became, well, is it the videos or is it the drug? And we go through that in the film, and you actually learn about that.
You said that Vivas is still looking for the right formula. And I'm assuming many of the other drug companies involved are as well. Haven't they been discouraged at all?
Well, I think that some of them haven't succeeded, so I think they found that discouraging. And Procter & Gamble ended up selling their whole pharmaceutical wing. So I think there have been some changes, but they see this as such a large market that I would be surprised if they don't keep pursuing it, some of them.
Mm. And is there anyone out there who looks like they might have something that on some level might work?
Biosante has a testosterone cream called Libby Gel that they're saying is going to be going up before the FDA this year.
Libby Gel? Why Libby?
Libby Gel, libido gel, oh. I guess, because it increases your libido. And so they claim that this is going to be wonderful for women.
Well, libido, of course, is a psychological thing, isn't it? So a gel will, I mean, that would be like saying, I'm a neurotic, so I'm going to put some face cream on.
Right.
I'm not sure I understand. So.
Well, I think there's this funny assumption that men and women are the same, and that if testosterone works in men to supposedly increase desire, that by giving women more testosterone because they have less, I mean, it's a belief that somehow women have less desire than men and that men have it because of testosterone. So if we give it to women, then all of a sudden they'll become much more sexual. But the reality is that, one, we don't really know what hormones affect desire. And when I interviewed Kim Wallen, who's been studying testosterone for the past 20 years, he's a neuroendocrinologist at Emory University and has reviewed all the data, he came back and said he didn't actually think that testosterone was the correct hormone. And in fact, context was way more important. He said, well, you know, if you see a couple on their honeymoon, you're not wondering what their testosterone levels are.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did the women who were desperate to have some cure so that they could have happier lives say to you?
Well, you know, in fact, I didn't encounter that many women like that, I have to say.
Well, there was that woman who put herself through the orgasmatron
That's true.
Trial. That was, I mean, that would have been a real ordeal for most people.
That's correct. I mean, she was very disappointed when the orgasmatron didn't work. All that it did to her was make her leg kick out uncontrollably. And she said to me, you know, I'm only good if you like to be kicked in the behind. But when I told her that she was absolutely normal, she was so happy. And now she's pursuing non-medical approaches to finding sexual pleasure.
You were recently named one of the top 10 independent filmmakers to watch by the Independent magazine. As you said, you've worked on documentaries on human rights mostly. Won how many awards? 45 awards or so? Are you going back to that, or has this opened up a whole new area of investigation for you?
I think that's a good question. Well, it's definitely been a really enjoyable ride, and I've done a lot of public speaking about this and become sort of an activist because I've been so upset by what I've been witnessing. And so I'm definitely going to continue my activism, but I'm going to also go back to doing the documentaries because I love that process.
Mm-hmm. Making films, you mean, or doing films about human rights issues?
Well, making documentaries on human rights issues. I also have a script that I'm working on that's dealing with women's issues. So it's something that I'm going to keep pursuing, filmmaking in general, I guess you would say.
And meanwhile, Orgasm Incorporated opens today at the Quad Cinema in Manhattan. I assume that many of the people in the field are very upset that you've made this film and that it's now being shown publicly.
I have to say I've had an incredible lawyer that's worked with me for many years pro bono, Rob Birchie, on this project, and it's made such a difference.
They've threatened to sue?
No, not to sue, but it has been a difficult road. Let's just put it that way.
Orgasm Incorporated opens today at the Quad Cinema in Manhattan. My great thanks to Liz Kanner for being on our show today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.